Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Wayne Moyer with us, Rosenfield Professor of Political Science at Grinnell College. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Ben.
And Tim Hagel in our Iowa City studio, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Hi, Tim.
Hey there.
Well, we've come upon a very historic moment here within the last few minutes. The House finishing up the $1.5 trillion Republican tax overhaul. It's ready for President Trump's signature. The House voting within the last few minutes on some last-minute revisions earlier today. It was a vote along straight party lines in the Senate, 51-48. All Republicans voting in favor, Democrats all opposed to this huge rewrite of the tax code, the first one in more than three decades, the long-awaited first big victory for the Republicans in Congress. Let's hear a few voices before we hear from you, Tim and Wayne. Senate Majority Leader McConnell says this legislation will mark a change from the last 8 years of slow economic growth. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Orrin Hatch called the law the most important tax breaks in this country's history. Senator John Thune from South Dakota says this is a great day for the American people.
Like I said, for the American people who are going to get bigger paychecks, and when this economy starts taking off and growing at a more normal rate, more wages, better growth, better paying jobs, this is just a win-win all the way around. And I think the people of this country are going to start seeing that early on next year.
Senator John Cornyn says the bill addresses something core to the health and values of the American economy.
To my mind, this is really a referendum on whether we still believe that the American dream is alive. We don't believe you have to settle for anemic growth, flat wages, and fewer jobs. And the jobs that we do have, too many of them being shipped overseas, never to come back. So we weren't willing to settle for the status quo because we believe that America can do better. And thanks to this important historic piece of legislation, I think all of the incentives and the pieces are in place for the American economy to take off and for that slumbering giant of the American economy to rise again and lead in the world economically and militarily as well.
This morning, minutes before the House was set to vote again on the bill, House Minority Leader Democrat Nancy Pelosi spoke on the House floor saying that Republicans have brought many bad bills forward.
But this is the worst because so many people are affected in such a negative way and because trillions of dollars of impact on our economy have been voted upon without any hearing from the people who will be most affected by it. No hearings, no expert events, no listening to the American people. Yesterday, our Republican colleagues stood on this floor and voted for a GOP tax scam that the American people opposed 2-1.
Okay, Pelosi calling it a tax scam. What do you think, River to River listeners? What's your reaction to the Republican tax overhaul soon to reach the president's desk for his signature and become law? Are you happy as you learn about the details? Is it good for the country? Is it good for the middle class? Does it make good on campaign promises that perhaps your Republican representative or senator was promising during the campaign, perhaps promises that the candidate Trump was promising there? Do you think there's a good match here? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Wide open question to both Tim and Wayne. First of all, Wayne, you go first. What's your reaction?
Well, my main reaction, I think, is will we be able to get the growth in the economy that this bill assumes? And if we don't, then the deficit increases. That's the one main issue for me. A second issue is how will average Americans react to the fact that the largest proportion of the benefits of this bill are going to corporations and to wealthy individuals? So I think we have a real election issue for November between the Democrats and Republicans.
Deep and permanent tax cuts for corporations, temporary, more modest cuts for individuals. Tim, your reaction?
Well, certainly, as we heard Pelosi, Representative Pelosi, mention that the bulk of the cuts go to the wealthy. Well, of course, the wealthy pay the bulk of the taxes. So to a certain extent, that's not surprising. And another way of looking at it, though, is what will the individual taxpayer get in return? Mm-hmm. And particularly a lot of folks that are in that middle class, since that seems to be the focus of both parties talking about, Republicans saying they will get a tax cut and Democrats saying they won't. Well, that's going to be the key. And that's one of the things that I think Mitch McConnell and Speaker Ryan were both talking about yesterday, especially after the House passed the initial version before they had to come back today and make some fixes, is that, well, look at your paycheck. That basically by February 1st, if everything is in place administratively, that you should see that you'll get more take-home pay. And so I think that will probably be more important for a lot of voters than some argument along the lines that, oh, corporations got a tax cut in some way.
Mm-hmm. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was asked by a reporter whether selling this law to the public will be tough. He says that people will respond positively to it, to be able to be passed with a simple majority. The Republicans had to make certain aspects of the tax cuts temporary. Democrats have said that Republicans will regret it. McConnell says it will be the Democrats that will suffer in the 2018 midterm elections because the bill will do two things.
Number one, provide middle-class tax relief. And number two, provide business changes that make us more competitive. With regard to the termination dates, let me tell you what terminates this tax cut. The Democrats take in the Congress next November would turn this into a very short tax bill. So I think focusing on dates that may expire because of the need to fit the reconciliation rules missed the point. Every single Democrat voted for this. They're all committed to repealing it and raising taxes on the American people. That's what's at stake in the fall of 2018.
Okay, let's get some reaction. We've heard from some members of Congress involved in this tax overhaul. We've heard from Tim and Wayne. Let's hear from you, River to River listeners, 1-866-780-9100. What's your reaction? Let's go to Reggie in Oskaloosa. Hi, Reggie. What's your feeling on this?
Hi.
There's
a couple of calculators out there that you can kind of figure out what the tax changes will do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've used them, and it says I'm getting anywhere from 3 to 4% cut in my income, so I'll have more taxes, so I'll have more money to take home. But I also wanted to say something about how the CBO scores it, what they're talking about, how it's going to increase the deficit. They use static scoring when they do tax cuts, which means that all the money that goes back to people gets stuffed in a mattress. They don't spend it. But when they do how the government spends money, they use dynamic scoring, which talks about all the jobs it's going to create. And there's a double standard there. And, you know, they at least need to be honest and consistent, use the same method both ways.
Reggie in Oskaloosa, thanks for your input there. Let's talk a little bit about the deficit. Tim, let me put this to you. Of course, the Republicans have been hammering home the message year after year, deficits are bad. Now we have not much attention paid to the deficit that may be created by this tax change. And we have Democrats warning that the GOP's next step is to turn entitlements, cutting entitlements, Social Security, and Medicare. But the Republicans' game plan is otherwise. They don't think this deficit will materialize.
They don't. And the reason they don't is because they expect growth to come as a result of this tax plan, that it will cause companies to bring jobs back to America, that it will cause other companies to expand their business in various ways, which will create more jobs and basically try to, again, expand the economy. And with that expansion, the goal is then to reduce the deficit. I don't know if it'll ever get to the point where it's zero or somehow actually attack the debt, but that's the plan. Now, if that expansion doesn't occur for some reason or another, and this is sort of what Leader McConnell was talking about, was that if Democrats take control, from his view, if Democrats take control of the House at least or the Senate, that there's a potential where some of these changes will be reversed, and that would perhaps, again, from his point of view, reduce the ability to expand the economy, and so then it will increase the deficit and ultimately the debt. So a lot of things going on here, and of course, we just have to a certain extent, and this is one of my favorite phrases, I guess, is we have to wait and see what actually happens with this tax cut.
All right, and so I guess, Wayne, this is another test, the latest test in supply side, also called trickle-down economics. Give big cuts to businesses and wealthy. This spurs investment. This generates jobs, raises the boats of everyone. I don't know. In the long view, has this been true in the past, Wayne?
I think it has not been true. And in fact, all of the independent economic analyses that I've seen are very skeptical. One, that we'll get the rate of growth, which this assumes. Two, that you'll create the number of new jobs that this assumes. And three, that it will lead to the kind of pay increases that the Republicans are assuming for people. There are questions here, but most of the independent analyses are very skeptical.
Okay, let's go to our phones. Our lines are full, so we want to kind of move through, get a spectrum of views on this latest law tax. It's still a bill. We remember that from Schoolhouse Rock, don't we? It's got to have the signature of the president before it becomes law, but this soon to become new tax law. Edith in Windsor Heights is joining us. Hi, Edith. What's your view?
I'm senior citizen. They keep talking about how more jobs and better paying jobs are going to bring the benefits to the middle class. But I don't get a paycheck. I don't work a job at this point. So I'm not going to benefit from higher wages, even if the higher wages occur. But if we get that big deficit increase, there's going to be pressure to cut Social Security and Medicare, and that does affect me very seriously.
Okay. Edith in Windsor Heights, thanks for your view. Let's go to Ryan, who's on the road. I hope driving safely and talking with us at the same time. Hi, Ryan. Welcome. What's on your mind?
I'm just calling to say that, you know, I agree with the other callers saying that supply side economics, you know, is questionable. It doesn't work. And historically speaking, after all of these tax cuts over the last 75 years by Republicans, what we've seen is if there is any sort of short-term growth, long-term, we see, followed up by a pretty massive recession. If you look at back to 1986, right, we had a similar situation with the economy under Reagan. So I don't think that anyone has looked at the historical situation of this, where this is happening in the future. It seems like a short-term fix, if it is a fix at all in any way.
Okay. Ryan on the road, thanks. Let's move on to Sally. Sally's in Marshalltown. Hi, Sally.
Hi. I have three quick things, and then I'll let you get on with it. Three problems I have with this. One, the tax cuts for the middle class are really temporary, and I view them as a bribe to get citizens to not be looking at what corporations are really doing. The corporations, many corporations currently are sitting on billions of dollars that they have not been reinvesting in the economy as the economy has been recovering. And if they haven't been investing it already, then why do they actually need a tax break to have more money to sit on? So I think that if we actually looked at how the money was flowing in the economy currently, it would be very, very apparent that the corporations really don't need a tax break. And lastly, I just read the National Geographic special issue recently on happiness, and the nations in the world that seem to be the highest in levels of happiness provide the most resources and services for their citizens. They have education and health and housing and various needs, infrastructure, transportation are provided for, and these places tend to pay pretty high taxes, and yet they're the happiest places.
All right.
People who are sad about paying taxes when they know it's providing the services they need.
Sally in Marshalltown, thanks for your view. What about the point, Tim Hagel, that we have no indications really that the corporations lacked money to invest. Now they have even more money. Why didn't they invest before? Why will they invest now, this cut from, what, 30-some percent down to 20, 21%? Why should that make a difference when they did not have a cash shortage before?
The argument is that the tax rate was so high that it basically they would sit on the money, that basically they didn't want to invest because if they did in various ways, and I can't get into the tax specifics, I really am not familiar with them, but basically the idea is that if they got that cash invested in various ways or made a profit or whatever, that the tax and taxes on that would be so high, so it's basically cheaper for them to keep sitting on the money. And the idea, again, part of this reform, is that by lowering the tax rate, it then will cause them to say, okay, now it's better for us economically to go ahead and invest this and make some money because now it's going to produce better profits or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Wayne, you first. Perhaps Tim want to weigh in on this too. Historically, tax cuts have been very popular with the public. Multiple polls showing this plan very unpopular. Something like 2/3 of Americans disagreeing with this plan. So, Wayne, is any idea? Is it simply that the Democrats' narrative at this point has been accepted more than the Republicans' version of what's happening, what's going to happen?
Well, the last big reform in 1986 was a balanced tax cut, and that the revenues were produced by that balanced out what the actual cuts were. And it's pretty clear this one is not balanced, and I think that may be part of the difference, at least between the reaction to the 86 tax reform and this one.
What about the fact that does this, perhaps this could explain it, Wayne, do you think this bill reflects, to what degree does it reflect the populist campaign promises of Republicans and Donald Trump, promises by Donald Trump that he's going to bat for middle-class Americans? Do you believe that reflects this, Wayne?
I personally do not. I think the benefits to corporations and the rich is not what he talked about in the campaign, and I think the benefits for the middle class and simplifications are not up to what he promised in the campaign.
Tim Hagel?
Well, you know, it's a complex thing because the rich or the corporations pay the most in taxes, that if you're going to have a tax cut, that you could, I suppose, have something along the lines of only taxing the higher levels and give the tax cuts only to lower levels, something of that nature. But that's going to create problems as well. And again, because the Republicans are looking at the economic side of things, it's not just a matter of giving people money back from their taxes. That the idea is, well, what would those taxes do? And this is something that we've seen in the tax code for decades, in that it's an attempt on the part of government to affect the economy in various ways, that you increase investment in one area, you decrease in another based on the tax code. And because of that, that's where the economic side of things comes into play, as well as just giving people back money for their pocketbooks. And that's something that actually Democrats were in favor of, too. They say give money back to the people. They'll have more money in their pockets. They'll spend more. That will spur it on the economy. So this isn't an argument that's exclusive to the Republican Party.
Let's go back to our phones. Tim Hagel with us. Wayne Moyer, our political analysts. Tim of the University of Iowa, Wayne of Grinnell College, and you on our phones for this Politics Wednesday edition of River to River. Mount Vernon is where Slayton is. And Slayton, you have a view on this tax overhaul and its effects.
Yeah, I'm a small business owner. My wife and I have about 10, I think right now, no, 11 rental units.
Mm-hmm.
And we hire usually maintenance people. And I don't hire maintenance people based upon my taxes. I hire them based upon my demand, like how many rental houses I have, how many things like that. So I've been at a loss to understand why a corporation, and I have a full-time job at Rockwell Collins, why a corporation ever hires anybody because they have more money. They hire when they have demand that needs to be met.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing in this bill that I see increases demand. So even though I might benefit from it, I don't understand how they get from point A to point B, cut taxes, hire more workers. Mm-hmm. I don't see that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Slayton, your business mind does not compute this tax bill well in terms of that. But you did mention that perhaps personally for you, you come out looking pretty good in this new tax prism there.
Because of the rental properties and the pass-through. I mean, I feel like I'm Senator Bob Corker to a certain degree.
In what way?
Oh, the Corker kickback. They were talking about
the hashtag. Oh, I got you. Yes, yes. I did read about that.
We'll be able to take those deductions now straight to our personal income, and that'll benefit us on a personal level. But we shouldn't support tax reform based upon how it benefits us personally. Mm-hmm. We should support it based upon how it benefits all of us through the nation.
All right. Slayton in Mount Vernon, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, 1-866-780-9100, discussing the tax overhaul that's just been passed again by the House, been ping-ponging back and forth, now headed to the president's desk. 1-866-780-9100. Are you happy about it as we hear more details? Is it good for the middle class? Is it good for you? Is it good for the country, as Slayton there in Mount Vernon says? That is the key question. Let's go back to our phones. Tom is with us in Des Moines. Hi, Tom. Not much time coming up to a break. What's on your mind? How do you see this?
Yes. Well, I had a number of concerns in your screen. You told me to limit them to two, so I won't talk about the trade debt or what we could have done for national investment. But I do want to mention that what we could have done about the national debt, if the Republicans were really serious, is not to blow a hole in the budget, which we're almost bound to do, it seems. But, you know, we could have just raised that corporate rate a couple of more points, and then the top bracket was lowered by 2 percentage points. Not too much mention is made of that. But the Republicans were bound and determined to give their rich donor friends a break there. And if they were really serious about it, they could have just raised both of those rates just a couple of points, and instead of leaving in doubt whether the national debt was going to be lowered by this, they could have said, okay, we will make this revenue neutral and then dig into the $20 trillion of national debt that we had before this tax bill. That's what we should be doing. That's what Bill Clinton did at the end of his second term. And we could have done that. And the second concern I
wanted to raise, very quickly, Tom, we're coming up on a break.
What will happen next? The Republicans are already talking about making the individual cuts permanent, and they're demanding that the Democrats go along with them. If the Democrats are smart, then they'll do what I just said. They'll take those back the 2 percentage points on the richest class, and the two or three more points on the corporate rate, and then
we've got to go to break, Tom. Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much. Wayne, is that possible? Deficit hawks here, not well represented in the Republicans with concerns. I guess we'll just have to wait and see how it turns out with this new plan, huh, Wayne?
I think that's correct, but the people who are concerned about the deficit are not happy.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment. Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. Within the last few minutes, the House has passed the latest version of the tax overhaul. It's headed to the president's desk. I suppose we'll discuss that a little bit more after the break. We have some more callers. We'll talk about that. Also, we'll talk about avoiding another government shutdown in a few days. Yes, already we're facing another one of those. Also, the Trump administration's first national security strategy released this week. We'll have views from that on that, and also an update on the Russia investigation. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Stay with us.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
And we're back midstream in this Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa, our political analysts on hand this week on a historic day for the Republican-led Congress. They are on the brink of their first major legislative victory here. It's heading to the president's desk after just minutes ago passing the House, a little bit of ping pong back and forth to iron out some last, I think, procedural things. But it is heading to the president's desk. We're asking you for the next few minutes. We want to get to a few other things, but we have time to take a few more calls. Your reaction to this overhaul. Are you happy? You think it's good for the middle class? Do you think it's good for the country? 1-866-780-9100. It was interesting. After the failure of the repeal of Obamacare, Tim Hagel, we heard from all analysts, perhaps you, I don't know, that tax reform didn't stand a chance. It was much harder, much more complicated to get a consensus among Republicans on that. So how did this pass? How did the Republicans rally the numbers and keep unified here?
Yeah, it certainly, there were a number of people, as you say, that indicated that it would make it much more difficult. And it probably did, that if you had Republicans successful in their repeal of Obamacare, that it probably would have pushed, you know, given them some momentum going into the tax thing. So it was certainly more difficult. And we saw that particularly in the Senate, where you had starting with a very slim margin for Republicans, and the Republican leadership had to deal with certain senators. Corker was mentioned, but Collins and Lee and, you know, people from different aspects looking at it. Some were concerned about the debt. Some were concerned about people not getting enough of a tax break and so forth, or too much going to the wealthy or the corporations, even on the Republican side. So it certainly was a lot of work to get that all sorted out. And it certainly is something that Republicans needed to get done. And I think that was part of it, in part because of the failure of the Obamacare repeal, that a lot of senators and Republican senators really said, OK, we really need to get this, or it really will hurt them come the November 2018 elections.
Okay, let's go back to our phones. I'm going to try some quick hits here on our phones. Those on the phones, please make your point as pointedly and as concisely as you can. We have a lot of people to get in, and we do want to get to some other issues as well. Randy and Ames, welcome to our program. What point or question do you have?
Well, I do think that overall, that as companies see some decrease in their taxes, that they will end up having to do something with that, equipment purchases or expansion and hiring more people. And I just think that's a great thing for all segments of society.
Okay, Randy and Ames, thanks very much. Stephen in West Des Moines, hi.
Hi, my point is that corporations really don't pay taxes. They simply collect taxes from people and then pass them on to the government. So whenever a corporation gets a tax break, we all get that tax break.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Stephen in West Des Moines. Dennis in Polk City.
Hi, I think this is a good thing because the next election, most of these Republicans that only did this to appease their donors will be voted out.
All right.
The main driving force of this is that since the Obamacare repeal didn't happen, the big donors told the Republicans that if they didn't get something done like this at the end of the year, they weren't going to give them any money next year. So whenever the people realize that the money won't talk in the election, they'll be voted out.
Okay.
Until the people figure that out.
Dennis.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Dennis in Polk City predicting, I think, they're a backlash against Republicans for this. We had the Affordable Care Act mandate removed by this, the tax penalty. You will, I guess, that's the way you understand it, right, Tim?
Right.
Okay. Wayne, jump in here, Terry, with any concluding thoughts on this tax overhaul before we move on.
Well, one thing I would say is I worry because this is a very partisan bill, and there's no Democratic support for it. And when Congress passes big legislation, which is partisan, it tends to be unstable. And as soon as the Democrats come into power, they will change it. So I think big things like this need to be bipartisan if you want them to be stable and hold over time.
The reference there would also be to Obamacare.
I think there was the same problem with Obamacare. It was pushed through by the Democrats, and of course the Republicans have been criticizing it ever since. So I think in terms of big legislation, it should be done in a bipartisan way.
Okay, let's go back to a couple more impressions from our phones. Larry's calling from Olwine. Hi, Larry.
Hello there. My point is a quick one. The Republicans do not believe in climate change, but they do believe in the fairy tale. The fairy tale being that tax cuts pay for themselves and cause great growth. And I'm 67, and so I guess, you know, maybe the 10th or 12th time, it might be the time that actually works. because it hasn't worked in my lifetime. So,
Larry in Oldwine, thanks for your view from Oldwine. Austin in Cedar Falls. Hi, Austin. Austin, are you there in Cedar Falls? No, Austin. I think we'll just leave it at that. Thanks for all those callers. Sorry we didn't get to you if you called in and didn't get on the air. We want to talk a little bit about related congressional work, congressional leaders trying to avoid a government shutdown in the form of passing a must-pass spending bill that also may ping-pong between the House and the Senate right up to the deadline in a few days. Republicans eager to avoid an embarrassing government shutdown, obviously, because they're in control of Congress and the White House. Wayne, how do you see this playing out?
I don't think there'll be a shutdown. I think people on both parties want to avoid it. We know that when the government shuts down, there will be very large financial costs, plus the fact that the Christmas holiday is upon us. So my guess is they will get something very short-term done and come back to the issue in January.
In order to do that, unlike this tax, which was done through reconciliation, they needed a simple majority. They need some Democratic support to read. What, Tim, 60 votes in this case. Are Democrats going to play ball, and at what price?
Well, that's the question, and especially the last word there, at what price? And this was something that Senate Majority Leader McConnell was asked yesterday, whether DACA, in dealing with the Dreamers, was going to be as part of that deal. He suggested not, and he said also suggested that he and Minority Leader Schumer have already talked about this, so they probably are working on it. But one of the concerns that Republicans at least would have is, well, what is the price? In other words, to get the number of Democrats on board to shut down debate so you can have that vote is, what are you going to have to give up, and will it be too much, and so forth, and how mad will Democrats be because the Tax Reform Act now has passed and is about to be signed. So again, we'll see in a couple of days as to what the specifics of that deal end up being.
Let me quote Politico, perhaps a major immigration deal coming in January to resolve the fate of these young undocumented immigrants. Their legal protections were put in question by the actions of President Trump. The so-called Dreamers, here's Politico quoting from that. At a Tuesday afternoon meeting with nearly a dozen senators deeply involved in immigration policy, White House Chief of Staff John Kelly pledged that the administration will soon present a list of border security and other policy changes it wants as part of a broader deal on so-called Dreamers. According to people who attended the meeting, the plan could come in a matter of days, senators said. So, Wayne, do you see this coming together, and major immigration policy legislation on the heels of this tax legislation?
I think there is a very strong chance that there will be an agreement in January and that it will be a compromise agreement. The administration won't get all that it wants, and the Democrats won't get all that they want.
Mm-hmm. Let me jump to national security. Wayne, this is really your wheelhouse, too. The administration had launched, announced its first national security strategy on Monday, I think. It was the president giving a speech. Let's listen to a little bit of that. It includes his speech on Monday, included what he sees as ways to advance American influence in the world.
But this begins with building up our wealth and power at home. America will lead again. We do not seek to impose our way of life on anyone, but we will champion the values without apology. We want strong alliances and partnerships based on cooperation and reciprocity. We will make new partnerships with those who share our goals and make common interests into a common cause. We will not allow inflexible ideology to become an obsolete and obstacle to peace.
Okay, the president speaking. Wayne, I heard, you know, that there was some criticized as a mismatch between the speech and actually the 68-page document. I don't know what stood out for you in this administration's first national security strategy.
Yeah, the mismatch, I think, was the strategy itself emphasizes the conflictual relationship between China and Russia and the United States, that we're in complete competition. Russia's trying to develop new spheres of influence in Eastern Europe, and China's trying to dominate Southeast Asia. But in terms of what Trump actually said, he didn't say anything bad about Putin at all and mentioned the telephone call the day before or something congratulating the United States for helping to break up a terrorist plot. So is Trump really on board in terms of the conflict with Russia? I think that's the big issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big thing for me about the whole document, and again, to what extent the government will follow it, it really is playing down multilateral cooperation and emphasizing buildup of American power and Fortress America. And emphasizing American strength rather than working to cooperate with other countries.
And this is you answered my next question. I think with that is this is a very different way to approach the world than the Obama administration had.
I think that it is the TPP, multilateral trade agreements, the World Trade Organization, the NAFTA negotiation. Trump seems to be pulling away from multilateral agreements and moving back toward bilateralism, both in policy, strategic issues, but also in economic issues.
And also reading the reaction of the Chinese, they were not very happy with some of this. I think even to quote something like, you know, acting as if we're back in the Cold War with China, for instance.
Yeah, and to some extent we do need to be tougher with China, but to make this into a power game is, I think, particularly when we do have common interests with the Chinese and others on such things as climate change, and we ought to be working together with them.
Okay, so we'll watch with the national security as this administration announced its first national security strategy on Monday. Let's see, the latest on the Russia investigation. I'm just picking apart some things that I read about. Please comment on it. One aspect here, the Senate Intelligence Committee looking at the presidential campaign of Green Party's Jill Stein for potential collusion with the Russians. Tim, are you up on this?
I had not heard that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know, Wayne, perhaps you are, that perhaps playing to Jill Stein to weaken Hillary Clinton's support?
I just saw a very brief piece on it. I think the overall issue here is Russian agents or government officials or those related to government officials were clearly involved in all sorts of ways on Twitter and Google, et cetera. And some of the things that they did may well have helped Jill Stein as well as hurt Hillary Clinton. So one of the things I hope that comes out of this investigation is a full overview of exactly what the Russians did.
Mm-hmm. Well, the president has already reached his conclusions, even though the investigation is ongoing. On Friday, President Trump emphasized again he does not think there was any collusion between his campaign and the Russian government.
There is absolutely no collusion. That has been proven. When you look at the committees, whether it's the Senate or the House, everybody walked my worst enemies. They walk out, they say, there is no collusion, but we'll continue to look. They're spending millions and millions of dollars. There is absolutely no collusion. I didn't make a phone call to Russia. I have nothing to do with Russia. Everybody knows it. That was a Democrat hoax. It was an excuse for losing the election, and it should have never been this way where they spent all these millions of dollars. So now even the Democrats admit there's no collusion. There is no collusion. That's it. And we got to get back to running a country.
Okay, President Trump on Friday said there has been evidence dug up that implicates what he calls the other side and misconduct related to the investigation of Hillary Clinton's use of email. Wayne Moyer, it's almost like we have an alternate reality there expressed by the president. Do you see it that way?
I do see it that way. And certainly we do know that there was substantial contact between some of people in Trump's campaign with the Russians at various stages. Michael Flynn has pleaded guilty. George Papadopoulos has pleaded guilty. Paul Manafort, who was his campaign manager for a while, has been indicted, not so much for the campaign, but for his working relationships earlier.
Mm-hmm. It's not even not so much. It's not having to do with the campaign. Yes, he was the campaign manager for a time, but it has to do with his other activities, and as far as Flynn and the other folks are concerned, that they pled guilty to lying to the FBI. And mm-hmm. so, again, an odd thing that goes on is this particular FBI person who had sent a fairly controversial, I guess is the word I want to use, texts about President Trump or the possibility of a President Trump was actually apparently the one who made a decision or a assessment that Flynn hadn't, in fact, lied. But it was when Mueller's team got in that they said, okay, we're going to use this as a bit of pressure so that they can try to get some more information. Now, we don't know what that information is or what kind of cooperation Flynn is giving to Mueller's investigation. Well, again, my favorite phrase, we'll have to wait and see. But again, it's not that there is specific collusion, but what gives the collusion some strength, I suppose, or at least lets people still talk about it, is the fact, as Wayne was mentioning, that there were a number of contacts, and sometimes if people were not forthcoming in terms of what those contacts were, that gets them into trouble when they're then telling the FBI, oh, I didn't have any contacts. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I did. And Sessions had some problems along these lines, too, and misremembering, and Democrats certainly beat
him up
for that.
Michael Flynn could have been charged with many other things. This is seen as a plea deal to let him off some other charges, and we're expecting that he has informed investigators about a number of other things. We just don't know what they are yet, right? This
exactly.
is sort of a tactic by the FBI. But Tim Hagel, what do you think about, I mean, the president's view there, his reality that there is no conclusion, even though the investigation is by most accounts long, it will not be wrapped up anytime soon, that it's a waste of money. What do you think about that reality that the president is his reality that he's expressing?
Well, I don't know so much that it's sort of different realities in all of this. It's sort of how you're looking at the facts. And, of course, we don't know what President Trump knows about what went on in terms of who was contacting who and so forth. And again, of course, collusion isn't a crime in and of itself. The question is whether there was something that was done illegal. So were there contacts with Russian officials by either Trump, apparently Trump suggesting not, but members of his campaign and so forth? There were some contacts. Now, were they in any way that had an intent to inappropriately influence the election? That's what Mueller's investigation is basically looking at. And then, of course, from Trump's point of view, you get in, well, okay, you're looking at my stuff. Why aren't you looking at the other stuff with Hillary Clinton and what was going on with all of that? And there's some evidence that suggests that there's some issues there as well. And it is going to go on for a long time, as many of these investigations do. And that's why some people were suggesting that we don't want to have a special counsel or independent counsel or whatever you want to call it at a particular time, because these things, folks basically dig into all kinds of stuff and they end up finding things that were tangential at best to the original point of the investigation.
Let me get your reaction to this. It goes back to a point you were earlier making. This is making a headline from Politico. The headline, "The Real Reason Trump Allies Are Attacking Mueller." Let me quote. "In the past week, investigators on Mueller's team have been publicly accused of bias against Trump and of violating criminal procedure to get documents related to his transition. The purpose of the onslaught, according to people close to the White House, isn't to encourage the president to oust the special counsel, a move that could precipitate a crisis in the Justice Department and potentially a move to impeach Trump. Rather, these people said the goal is to sow public doubt about Mueller and his prosecutors in advance of upcoming criminal trials and to give the president political cover if he wants to start issuing pardons to any current or former aides swept up in the Russia scandal." Wayne, what do you think about that interpretation? The attacks of the last few days, is that the real reason Mueller's being attacked?
It could be. I think what you're seeing, though, is you have a president who the investigation is getting closer and closer to his inner circle. And you would expect, as the legitimacy of the president is more and more questioned, that he would strike back and the people around him would strike back by undercutting the negotiation to strengthen the president. And I'm pretty sure that's what's going on. Whether it's pardons, I don't know about that. But I think that it's a natural reaction as you get closer to the president in an investigation that the president and those around him will strike back.
Mm-hmm. What about that notion, Tim Hagel, that they're getting very close to the inner circle? The Trump administration is striking back, trying to undermine the credibility of the Mueller team.
Well, it's certainly hard to deny the inner circle part of that because, of course, when you get Flynn, and even though Manafort wasn't there for a long time, he still, for at least a certain period of time, was part of an important part of the Trump campaign. So certainly when you're getting those high-level kinds of people, as opposed to Papadopoulos, who was described as a coffee boy or something of that nature, that these are people that will have more information as to the high-level decisions and decision-making that was going on. And so if there was anything particularly inappropriate, perhaps even illegal, then they would perhaps be the best ones to know about it. Maybe that's why Flynn cut the plea deal. We'll have to wait and see again. Sorry, my favorite phrase.
But we'll have to.
But a good one to end the show with.
It's a good thing to do, because that's one of the problems that we have sometimes, is trying to jump all over every little bit of information, and we really have to wait. Let Mueller do his job and see what comes of it.
Agreed.
Tim Hagel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Iowa. Wayne Moyer, Rosenfield Professor of Political Science at Grinnell College. Wayne and Tim, thank you for joining us this hour.
Welcome.
Thank you, Ben.
River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We always welcome your comments and questions. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.